Hello and welcome to Two Young Drunks, a podcast by young people in recovery for young people in recovery. My name is Luke and I'm an alcoholic.
And I'm Jamie. I'm an alcoholic too.
And welcome to the show. So, hello, Jack, I guess this week. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Hello.
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 Good to have you.
It's good to be here.
So I only met you the other week. How long have you been in Bristol?
I've been in Bristol for about 3 months.
Okay. And where were you previously?
I was in Brighton for the best part of 10 years.
Okay. And so is that where you got sober?
That is where I got sober, indeed. About 4 and a bit years ago.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Good stint.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
So far, have you noticed any differences between recovery in Brighton and in Bristol?
Not really. There's a couple of like in Brighton recovery, I found that we never formalized home groups, as in like being like, this is my home group. And then.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was more just like your home group is just your home group and you know it. But yeah, you don't really account for it to other people. And so also, yeah, with group consciences, then yeah, it was more like whoever wanted to come would come rather than just like
official home group members. What about service positions then?
Service positions would just come to whoever, yeah, we would just announce them in the meeting and people, yeah.
To whoever regularly turned up.
Yeah, yeah. And that's it. And we usually just, yeah, vote on the time, which obviously sometimes means that people might get voted in and then not turn up. But yeah. So that's one of the things I noticed. And also calling chairs. Chairs?
Yeah, you call them chairs, don't you?
Yeah, we call them chairs. And then what you call a chair is a secretary.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I say, I was doing American meetings over lockdown and they often call the chair, what you call the share, the lead. So, yeah, it's all semantics, I guess.
But yeah. All this bloody lingo.
Yeah.
But yeah, but otherwise, other than those like small, like, yeah, practical differences, like, yeah, there's, you know, there's a bunch of young people in recovery in Brighton and, you know, and there's a bunch here and yeah, what I tell this, and it's, you know, and it's all really strong. And I think obviously Brighton and Bristol are similar, in fact, in the way that they have a lot of students, they have a lot of people that come there to get fucked up and therefore, you know, that goes hand in hand with having really strong recovery because, yeah, where loads of people get fucked up. I think, obviously, having moved from Brighton to Bristol, kind of at the end of lockdown, like I've been going to meetings online for the last, however long lockdown was, a year and a half. I was going to them in Holland, America. So I guess, yeah, and I'd kind of detached from the Brighton scene somewhat. It was all virtual. So it's kind of
good transition.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good time to move. Kind of made it easier, I guess. But yeah, so my first physical meeting in almost 2 years was in Bristol. And I think that was the biggest change, just like going back in the rooms and feeling that energy, I guess.
Yeah.
And like making eye contact with people, and like hearing them fidget and shit. And like, I was super into that. Like phones were ringing whilst I was talking and it was actually like, I loved it. Like, you know, probably not now. I'm starting to get resentful again now. Yeah. But yeah, there was a little moment where I was like, it's all fucking beautiful. This is great.
One of the things I found, because I've done meetings both in Bristol and Brighton, was like, because Brighton's a little bit smaller than Bristol, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, there were, I found the fellowship, it was just more convenient. Like, the young persons, like, they all go out afterwards and they all, like, they all connect with each other a bit more. They can easily pop and see each other for coffee. Whereas here, it's a little bit bigger, so it's a little bit more inconvenient. So do you think that convenience of Brighton means like everyone's a bit closer, or is that just how I perceived it? Because
I think that's kind of twofold for me, because I know the period that you're talking about, which was like, it probably would have been around the period like 4 years ago,
4.5 years ago, yeah,
when I came in and like, well, you know, in, yeah. And it was like, yeah, and I remember it was summertime and literally I went to a meeting every day. There was always fellowship. You know, I spent like the same amount of money that I was spending on booze, like on just like ice creams and coffees. I was just having them every day, like fellowship, staying out of the house. I needed something to do. And it was, you know, like I needed that. because I didn't know how to socialize without that stuff. And so that fellowship was really strong then. And so the years after that, like, you know, there was a core group and we did kind of drift apart a little bit. And whether or not that fellowship still happens, I can't say, because, you know, because obviously that's my own personal recovery. Life gets busy. I was going to less meetings. And, you know, I'm not sure whether that was just that period of time, because obviously that's my perception of it, or whether or not. But yeah, obviously Bristol was a lot bigger. Like, you know, the meetings are a lot more spread out across the city. Brighton, you can walk to all the meetings within about 20 minutes of each other. Most people would live 20 minutes from the meetings. Like, it's not a massive place. So maybe the proximity, maybe it was just the summer of love.
The summer of love.
I like what you said before about the, where there's lots of people getting fucked up, is also a good recovery. Like, I feel so lucky that, because I came to Bristol as a student and it was like this land of promise in terms of like, yeah, go out partying all the time. And I love that it hasn't, like, my experience of alcoholism and then recovery hasn't been like, hasn't spoiled my perception of Bristol. Like, because now equally, it's just different, but in an equally good way.
Mm. Yeah, man. And I think, you know, yeah, that's important, because obviously, I mean, Bristol, I'm kind of from the southwest. I'm from the southwest originally, and I used to come to Bristol and get fucked up a lot. And whilst I was still using in Brighton, I was planning on moving back to Bristol with the intention of just like drinking and using myself to death, because I was like, yeah, that's a place that you got to get fucked up. But I never lived here getting fucked up. And, like, you know, a lot of places that I lived whilst I was either, you know, that I used to use a lot in, or even just grew up in, I'm like, it's always a shithole. Everywhere I lived was a fucking shithole. Apart from Brighton, I did always really enjoy Brighton. But yeah, if I can, you know, I drank myself into recovery there and used myself into recovery there. But yeah, having found sobriety there, I still had a love for the place. It wasn't like I was like, oh, fuck, I need to leave. I could have happily stayed there forever. And I think that, you know, and that's nice. Because sometimes it feels like, you know, before I found this stuff, I assumed I'd have to like change everything, change where I lived, you know. Like, obviously it's common in recovery, is like the geographical, and you assume that, yeah, this is like, it was Brighton's fault that I fucking was smoking crack. But I fucking smoke crack wherever. I moved to Belfast because I was like, I need to not use drugs. And if I move to Belfast, I won't use drugs because they're all controlled by the paramilitary. And like, you know, on my first day there, I found a drug dealer who fucking just gave me free drugs the whole time I was there. You know what I mean? Like, I used just as much I would find drugs in the Sahara Desert. Like, so yeah. Anyway, I kind of think I drifted off there a little bit.
But no, yeah, it's all very friendly.
But yeah, Bristol is sick and it's fucking great to be here. So like, yeah, I think actually moving here, like, again, I could have easily stayed in Brighton, and I do hate change. My girlfriend wanted to move back to the Southwest, so came here. But like, yeah, it's like, it is amazing. Like, this is probably my favorite place that I've lived. It's fucking, I love it here. It's crusty, but like the right amount.
And it's your first time moving in sobriety, like actually processing those feelings of a change.
Yeah, no, that's it. Because, you know, because when I was early recovery as well, like, I was like, you know, it went from having to move all the time to change to being like scared that I was like, I can't leave because this is where my recovery is. And if I move, I'm going to use because I don't have my support network, you know, the fellowship that I've gotten used to. But yeah, you know, as the years went on, like, I started to realize that wherever I go, there would be recovery, you know. And yeah, like, but it was still, you know, as I say, change of any kind is always daunting. And I think especially for, like, yeah, alcoholics.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, it puts my heckles up and it makes me like fucking, yeah, just fucking puts me out of sorts. But, you know, yeah, and it was still difficult this time. And especially, you know, having to try and find somewhere to live, and especially I was kind of a student at the time and like, you know, not knowing what I was going to be doing for work. But, you know, through actually just working my program, I try not to fucking sit on it too much. Like, I have faith that things will be all right. Like, I always look at it as like, I haven't died yet. And I haven't, you know what I mean? Shit has got bad, but I haven't died. And if I haven't died yet, like, why am I going to die? Because that's where my head will take me. I'm like, I'm going to move somewhere. I'm not going to be able to find a job. I'll become homeless. I'll start using and I'll die. That's just like my, you know, that's what my process is. But yeah, I like kind of let go of that and just let things. And things have fallen into place like so well. I've got such a nice flat with me and my girlfriend. I've got like a job, which is like a really cool job. I'm at uni studying. Like, you know, I've got into the recovery scene here. I've like met cool people, and like, my life is fucking really good. And it's like, yeah, I didn't plan any of it really. I didn't, like, you know, but these are the things that, you know, I want and need. And you know, I don't need all of them, but I have them anyway. And I'm really lucky for that. And that is, you know, a direct result of working 12-step program and of just like kind of trusting in the process, trusting that I will be held by, you know, my higher power and those, you know, just fucking stop fighting it. Because as soon as I try and start controlling it, like I just fucking dick out. And then it's just like everything is just fucked. And I'm just like, you know, and I'm just like, oh, just running around like fucking hating on everything. It's like, actually, yeah, it doesn't have to be like that. And for the most part, you know, yeah.
I know what you mean. Because I before I had no faith that things would just be all right. And now I'm kind of learning through experience. Like, as long as we do the things we should, keep working 12 steps, keep talking to others and doing what we're doing right now, things will be all right.
Yeah. Positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like getting through. The best part of recovery is like getting through shit sober and being like, I made it through that shit without needing a drink. And you need to collect those.
So tell us a bit about your kind of journey into recovery. What brought you up to the doors?
Ooh, yeah, that's a good question. Cause you know, like I hit a lot of rock bottoms like throughout my life. And for me, like, you know, I knew that I had an issue. You know, I knew I was fucked up with something from like really early on. And I also, you know, knew that I drunk and used like every day. I never really put two and two together, I guess, for a long time. And it was weird. It was almost like I was blindsided to that. But, you know, because my life got pretty problematic from my using and drinking. Like I was 16. I fucking like was blackout drunk and like beat up my stepdad. Got kicked out of my house, started living in a caravan in my friend's garden. And was like, okay, shit. Yeah, this is like a problem. Like drinking and you, like, you know, that isn't normal. It's not a normal thing to have happened. So I should probably stop. And, you know, and then from then on, like it was a concerted effort pretty much on a daily basis to be like, right, today I'm not going to use, today I'm not going to drink. And like pretty much without fail, like maybe sometimes I'd make a day, usually if I just didn't have the money or the means to get it.
At 16?
Yeah, at 16. Yeah, wow. Yeah, at 16, I was just like, you know, I had that. Because, you know, I started drinking and using quite early on. Like I was drinking in the morning on the way to school, probably 13, 14. I mean, yeah, to go back a bit more, like, and my dad, obviously I can't diagnose anyone, but like, he's an alcoholic. My older brother was a heroin addict. He's not in recovery, but yeah, he's a heroin addict. And so I grew up around that and I always had like a really negative view of alcohol and drugs and was like, nah, I'm not going to do that. But like I had that feeling of isolation. It felt fucking weird. As far as I can remember, when I was 10, I was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. It was really mild because that's, you know, like that kind of thing, disability, to get diagnosed that late kind of shows how mild it was. But, you know, I was already feeling different and fucking weird and that like compounded that. And that's not to say that that's the reason that I'm an alcoholic. It's definitely not. As I said, I believe I would be an alcoholic no matter what my circumstances were up to that point. Like, I don't think, you know. But yeah, that was something that I did hold on to for a long time. So I had those feelings of feeling different and not wanting to do drugs and alcohol. But then once I found them, and inevitably I did, and the relief it gave me, you know, and I think I had my first drink around 11. The first proper drinking was, yeah, around 13, 14. And that's when I started, you know, and I pretty much just started becoming a daily drinker and user from that point. And, you know, I found weed around that time. I found pills around that time. And it was always like, right, I'll do that. I won't do this, you know. And I was always like, obviously my brother's a heroin addict. So I was like, you know, it went from I won't do drugs to I just won't do heroin, you know. And I did end up doing heroin, you know what I mean? Because I was constantly moving the goalposts and it took a while to get there. I think I was 19 when I first did heroin. And, you know, and I didn't really take to it. I took to other stuff a lot more, like uppers, and yeah, I much preferred smoking crack and freebase. But yeah, like, you know, but then again, but you know, but none of that stuff is relevant. Like, you know, with any, I held on to any substance, and you know, and obviously that moving those goalposts and that morality, like, it made me hate myself, and the fact that I couldn't quit made me hate myself, and I felt so just out of sorts, and like, you know, and I was constantly going to therapists, doctors, and I was just like, why is no one helping me? Like, I'm unwell. Like, there's something wrong. And, you know, and I always felt like people just weren't listening to me, or they were like, stop taking, you know, drugs and drinking. And I'm like, that's the solution. That's the only thing, you know what I mean? That's a symptom. It's not the cause, is what I always said. So, you know, and I went around like that just for years. And, you know, and it just gets, you know, super boring. It's just the same thing, you know, and I moved around, you know, got other people involved in my madness, and, you know, but once I had done the steps, I realized just how it was, like, you know, like 1 month of my step four resentments and fears was just my whole life, just on repeat, different people and places. When I was 27, so in 2017, I lost 3 family members, pretty much like relating to this illness, like 2 of them just drunk themselves to death, just got really mentally unwell and drunk themselves to death. And then one of the husbands of my auntie who drunk herself to death, he like died. So I kind of like, you know, and I think there was like, you know, just the trauma of it, but also that they did, he had like benzos in his system. But yeah, anyway, so I was like, at that point, I was like, okay, he's like, you know, they just got so depressed and they just kept drinking and no one could stop them. And like everyone just witnessed it happen and no one could do anything. So I was like, cool, that is the only answer for me. And I kind of accepted my fate and just started like,
crossed another line.
Yeah. I was just like, fuck it. Drink myself to death. That is the only option. Like basically. And, you know, so obviously my mum was going through grief. She'd lost her sister and fucking, you know, it's horrible when I think about it, but she was just like, I can't talk to you. Like you're too, like, yeah, it's too depressing. I just need to wait for you to die. So like she kind of cut off and I was just like, yeah. Waiting for that moment. I got signed off of work, like indefinitely for chasing. I was working for the council. And yeah. Chased one of my coworkers out of the office, got signed off, and they were paying me on full. So like, yeah, so it was sick. I had all the time to drink, so I just started drinking and using all day, every day. Mm-hmm. I had like a pretty good salary, like more than I ever thought that I would earn. I was like fairly high functioning. I managed to do these things, you know, and feeling like a fraud, obviously that, like, you know, it was a whole other thing. I was working like in the support kind of in like, you know, sector. And I was like in the evening, like, you know what I mean? Like smoking Freebase and shit. Just was like, horrible stuff. But yeah, anyway, so yeah, around that time I signed off and like, you know, I remember just like everything just stopped working. Like I had always like bounced around substances and alcohol and it kind of kept it going. Like when something stopped working, I'd move on to the next thing. And just, I just remember everything had stopped working. Just my internal monologue was just screaming. Mm. Everything was just hot. Like it was, I still get goosebumps now when I think about it. I can like feel it still. And I'm glad I can get in touch with that, because it's, yeah, I need to remember how bad it was. And it was just like this feeling. I just remember it was just sheer black shit, just hopelessness. And so, and I was like in the road in Brighton, like trying to chuck myself in front of buses, but like super drunk, like fucking got cerebral palsy. So my fucking hand-eye coordination is terrible anyway. So I was like flopping around, like I lost my keys, like been losing my keys every day. Like I'm getting evicted from my house. Like everything is just terrible. And a friend of mine who I used to use with back in when I lived in Winchester, he happened, it was about 1:30 in the morning and he just came down the road and I knew he was in recovery and I just asked for help. I was like, dude, please, like, just help. He sat down with me that night on the side of the street whilst I kind of sobered up a bit for about 4 hours. And he was just like, he just told me about how he was actually happy, about how he didn't think that he could have been, but he was. And like, you know, and this guy was like, he was rugged. Like when we used to use together, like I assume was way worse than me. I assumed that he would have just died, but he, you know, he wasn't. And he was sober. He was a few years sober. And I remember, because one of the things he showed me is like, he had a video. He's like, look what I've done in recovery. And like, it was a video of him tattooing a dick onto another dude in recovery's leg. But it was just like, and it is dumb, but it's like, because it made me, because, you know, because obviously my view of recovery is like, it's going to make like, you
everything
know,
suck.
Yeah. Straight and boring.
But I was like, you know, because that's the kind of shit that he would do when he was using.
Yeah.
But he was like happy, he was sober and he was still doing dumb shit. So to me, that was like, it was attractive.
Yeah,
like it's probably not attractive to me now that I'm like, you know, emotionally a bit more well. But at the time, like that was like, I was like sick. And, you know, and that night he was like, look, tomorrow just don't pick up. He like wrote his number on like a big bit card. He was like, go to sleep, hold this, just ring me. And, you know, and the next morning, so I woke up with that the next morning and was like, I rang him up. But, you know, and the madness of it was because, like, you know, I was trying to fucking stop every day and I just couldn't do it. But he, you know, as soon as I was like, right, let's go to a meeting. And I was like, you know what? I'm actually feeling pretty blessed today. I think I can just do it myself.
Yeah.
I don't think I need to go to a meeting.
Fear.
Like, you know, but he was like, and I'm glad he was. He was like, no. He was like, come on. I saw you last night. It's like, come, just trust me. Come to a meeting. So yeah, he took me to his first meeting. My first meeting. like instantly fucking connected. Like, you know what I mean? I'd felt so alone up to that point, but yeah, I like, for me, I know this isn't everyone's story, but for me, like I instantly just like, it was a completely different story from my own, but like the emotional and the internal side of it, I was just like, fuck. And I was just like, holy shit. So yeah, that was my first meeting and that is my sobriety date. The 13th of June, 2017. And for me, is that like, you know, I went back to a meeting every day of that week. And the more, you know, for me, like 2 or 3 days of sobriety time was wild. And that gave me faith in the meetings to keep coming back.
Yeah.
You know, and like, yeah, the weird thing, because I said about how, you know, I always felt that no one was trying to give me help, but it was like weird. I got my medical record like when I was a couple of years into sobriety and I looked at it and literally people were telling me to go to the 12-step recovery and be abstinent from drugs and alcohol from the age of like 15.
Really?
And I never heard it. Yeah. Even like 2 weeks before I had to go up to Millview, I was having psychotic episodes and literally I had to sign off. They gave me all these antipsychotics and I had to sign it off to say that if I did kill myself, basically that they wouldn't be liable kind of thing. Like, we'll give these to you, but if you OD, we're not liable. And I remember looking at that like a few months later and like literally said on that and go to meetings. Yeah, I just didn't.
I think there's something about like another alcoholic having to tell you, because it, same here in terms of, yeah, I'd heard of it before and even the idea of sobriety, like no one could have told me to stop drinking completely other than someone who had done it. Yeah. Because I knew that they had knew how I felt, you know. And yeah, for me as a friend, you know, I saw him and seeing that he could do it made me realize, like, shit, maybe I can.
Yeah, man. I think, yeah, you know, and I think, yeah, we're lucky because, you know, because as I say, my friend who was in it, and I had another friend who was in it. So I was lucky to have like that personal connection already with people and see them get well and actually, you know, progress in life and like be happy and like, you know, just be able to live. That's because I just couldn't do that. But, you know, but I think even for people that don't have that, like that is still on offer for everyone. And I also fully believe in the fellowship, like, you know, because it wasn't just my friends that gathered around me. I was always surrounded by people in recovery. Like, you know,
like, when you go to that first meeting, isn't it, you get held. Like, yeah, I mean, any of us experience, whenever I see anyone new in, like, I'm immediately thinking like they must feel awful, they must feel so let down, like, and you just want to rush over there and you just want to be like, you know, you got this, like, we're going to get you through. And that's, I mean, that's the great part about it.
Yeah, man. Yeah, 100%. That's, you know, it's why it works.
So I actually think I didn't ask you this at the start, which is very, very bad form of me, but what have you had to face sober this week?
So, yeah, my life has become super busy in a really good way with really good things. But I have found myself, like, you know, I've taken on working like pretty much full time, but also doing a postgraduate degree and, you know, have a relationship and, you know, trying to keep my recovery in check. So all of that is like a constant, you know, thing. But yeah, like yesterday, it's not really something that I had to face, but like, just like work got really stressful and it was more like someone else's stress, but like it really affected me. And then it just like made me cry and like dealing with crying, like, I don't know. It kind of sounds, because it's not like a physical thing, but like having that, you know, I wouldn't say it's like, it wasn't a difficult thing. It was actually a really nice thing, but it's still like something that I have to process because it's something that I'm not that accustomed to. Like when I first came into recovery, I didn't cry for like the first 2 years or so, maybe three. And like, I always felt like I wanted to.
Mm.
I felt the emotions behind it, but I couldn't physically do it. And, you know, and it still is a rarity that I do, but when I do, it's actually like I feel this purge. And yesterday, I think I just needed that. Like, there wasn't any real reason to it. And I remember, like, I was on the phone to my boss and she was like, she could tell that something was up. I didn't tell her that I was crying, but she could tell that I changed. And I was just like, but yeah, I didn't feel like I was being I was just like, because I processed it in the moment and I kind of took like a spot inventory and was just like, why is it? And I think it was just like, you know, I'm just so like high, you know, I stress at the moment. I have a lot going on. I think I'm just holding on to stuff and then I just need a purge and just to kind of like, you know, there was a comfort in it that, yeah, it was actually just really nice. And I said, you know, and I said it to like my coworkers, which again is something like that I like, yeah, is something that I could, yeah, before recovery is like, you know, it's almost like taboo, I guess. I mean, it's definitely taboo for men to cry. Like, you know, it's a well-known thing and it shouldn't be. But yeah, I think Yeah, what was the question? What's the hardest thing I've had to face?
What have you faced sober this week?
Well, I've faced, yeah. So yeah, it wasn't a hard thing, but it was something that I faced. Well, I guess my own emotions and, you know, being able to be honest about it and to look at it and to kind of accept it, I guess.
It sounds like it's quite a milestone though. Like to think about the fact that you couldn't cry for so long and you finally actually like your body and your mind have made that connection.
Yeah.
Like that sounds like it's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Just right, like
for real.
You're finally like properly processing your emotions.
Yeah. No, 100%.
You mentioned that like purge. I think the only way I would have done that previously is by getting super wrecked. Do you know what I mean? Like that's the only way I knew how to process any emotion, whether that be like happiness, sadness, stress, anger, whatever. The only answer was ever to crack open a drink.
Yeah, that's it. So yeah, so to actually just be able to sit, because you know, because that is like, yeah, that's one of the best things that I think I've had about recovery, because I literally couldn't handle any emotion. When I first got into my relationship that I'm in now, like I almost drunk and like used, and it wasn't even like toxic. It was just like a really nice relationship, yeah. But I didn't understand the emotions that I was feeling because I just never, ever had them.
Yeah.
Like without drinking and using on them. I just like, you know, I've been in plenty of relationships, but yeah, just never like sober, like had like basically love. And it was just like so overwhelming that it just made me really anxious.
You have to face kind of like what you truly feel about yourself too in a relationship, don't you?
Yeah.
It's like you're sharing that with another person and like, whether they'll accept you for who you are and all that stuff is really difficult.
Yeah, nah, it's definitely difficult. And that's why, you know, because they always say like, you know, no relationships in the first year.
Yeah.
And I was always like, you know, so obviously I fucked around and always relapsed a bunch of times in my first year. Of course I did. Like it was just, but you know, but I hadn't, you know, but then I got in that relationship a year in and that's when I realized why they said it. Because yeah, all those other little like fucking around when I was still sick and fucking around with sick people. But yeah, when I'd like found something that was actually really quite healthy, it was still
difficult,
really, really difficult. And like, yeah, just like the paranoia and all that, you know, the past trauma and like, you know, coming to terms with, you know, and it is, yeah, it's all the stuff that we carry around. And so, you know, the reason why we carry on doing the steps, coming to meetings, you know what I mean? Those, that's like that now, like those fucking feelings are the reasons why, I guess, rather than just not wanting to drink, because I haven't really wanted to drink properly for years now. I can't think of like that compulsion hasn't happened for a long time. Like,
meaning you're like the transition is for me with, and it sounds like in your situation was very much similar. It was like almost from black to white, you know, the life before, my life is like pivoted on two moments, like before recovery and after recovery. And that after recovery, there's initial bits for me, incredibly overwhelming and difficult. I mean, how did you, like, thinking about, like, those first 3-4 weeks or months, even into early recovery, man, what was that like for you?
Oh, man, it was fucking, like, because I was pink cloud in a way, like, I'd, you know, I found, like, I'd found something, so I was, like, but I was manic, like, I was mental, because I was still signing off work, I was trying to go back to work. I was just like, you know what I mean? And they were like, hell no. I was like, please, I need to do something. And, like, you know, and I was still, like, you know, I was just sweating out, you know what I mean? I was detoxing, like, I lost so much weight, I was down to, like, 8 stone. I think like I was just from like sweating out and like, you know, I would leave the house. So I was still living, like I was getting evicted, but I was still living with people that were using. So I'd like get up at like 7 a.m., leave the house. I'd come back at midnight. I would just spend all day walking around town, going to meetings and just walking and like, you know, and that, so like, you know, that's what I physically did to get that and just like kind of get out of my head, because like the processing it. Yeah, it was just, my head was a fucking mess. And it was for, I mean, it still is now, but you know,
better.
But like, yeah, it's a lot better.
More organized.
Yeah, definitely. But you know, but yeah, it took, yeah, the first like 6 months are kind of a blur. And yeah, I jumped into the program as much as I could. Then I was held, you know, I had a lot of fellowship and, you know, I got a sponsor, like I think I was 8 days in, I got a sponsor. I got service around about the same time that I was going through the steps and just kind of, yeah, as I say, I ate a shitload of ice cream because, yeah, it was June. I had to eat ice cream like 2 or 3 times a day. I was just like, always just like, please, someone has to go take me for ice cream because I can't be by myself and I need ice cream.
It almost like, replaces your drugs and alcohol. I'm out of ice cream, like the panic.
You know, and it was like, you know, and it was difficult, you know, confronting that, but, you know, like I never had any doubts about that. This is what I needed to be doing. Like for me, to finally find it. And I think, you know, I was 27. I've been doing the same shit for a long time. And yeah, for me, I knew that, you know, and I did have faith, as I say, within about 5 days of being sober, I was like, I'm pretty sure this can keep me sober forever as long as I, like, you know, do it properly. And that's why, you know, I got the sponsor and I did all the things that were suggested, you know, despite not knowing like what they meant, like praying and shit. I still just did them to the best of my ability until it just started working, I guess. But yeah, yeah, the head, like, it was, you know, it was tough. Because also, like, as I say, when with my mum, like, she, and, like, you know, bless her, like, I put her through a lot. But, you know, I was like, so we literally cut off contact because she was like, I'm waiting for you to die. And then as soon as I got sober, she was like, yeah, but you weren't that bad. You're not like, I don't think you're an alcoholic. You weren't that bad. I was like, but, you know, but that is like, I understand where that thinking comes from. Because also, I think a lot of people like what a view of what an alcoholic is. It's like a very specific thing.
Yeah.
And also, you know, and I'm not a parent, but like, I can only imagine, like, you know, the guilt and shame if, like, you know, especially as, like, yeah, my younger brother is, you know, is kind of like me. He was in the rooms for a bit, isn't at the moment. But yeah, just kind of being like, I fucked up my kids. Whereas, yeah, like, actually, it's just like, you know, I'm like, Mum, it's not about you. Like, and it's fine. Like, you know, it doesn't, and, you know, and also what is fine, it doesn't actually matter what, because my friends were the same. I did a lot of my using, like, you know, I used to like smoking, like, fucking random stuff. Like, I did pretty much that by myself. Like, you know, like, a lot of that stuff I did behind closed doors. Like, so I think people, yeah, they were like, yeah, you're not that bad. Like, my friends were like that as well.
Yeah, and some
friends,
that too. Yeah.
And I think also, and a lot of my friends, because they used like me, they feel like it's an attack as well. Like, yeah, they're like, oh, what, if you're saying you've got a problem, you're saying I've got a problem.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, so I did have to detach from a lot of friendship groups, and yeah, they're still, you know, I'm still in touch with them. Like, you know, I was kind of tied in somewhat professionally with a bunch of them, but it's, yeah, you know, it was a difficult time, but I just surrounded myself with, you know, the people in the rooms. And, you know, and for me, that is like, you know, that fellowship was really important to me. And that's kind of what kept me through, because a lot, you know, I said my friends before, like, yeah, were they really, you know, were people that all used together and enabled each other. But, like, you know, it just goes to me, like, I never fucking listened to them, and they never listened to me. You know what I mean? We'd probably just have the same conversation every week because we're so fucking self-involved. And I remember, like, I started going to meetings and I would like talk to people, and then like I'd see them, you know, at a meeting a few days or a week later, and they would like carry on the conversation. They'd be like, oh yeah, how's that thing that you were dealing with? And like, that was like mind-blowing to me, because no one had ever like remembered. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean, just to have that, I was like, actual human connection, like normal, just like, you know, like caring about people and, you know, remembering their name. And yeah, like, so that I was just like, fuck. And like, you know, and I started to build these like really actual, like, meaningful relationships. And that was just fucking, yeah, I think that's the stuff that kept me coming back in the early days. Because, yeah, because I didn't want to be by myself. I didn't know how to be by myself. And, you know, even though towards the end of my drinking, a lot of it was just in rooms, like, by myself. But, yeah. And, you know, and now actually, you know, like, I am very much more comfortable being by myself. But, yeah, in the early days, I needed just to be held and to have people around me. Yeah.
In terms of your study in music production, and I know you're a producer in your spare time, how have you found the change in your, or have you seen any change in your relationship with creativity in sobriety?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, because being a creative, like when I was using, it was like, it was literally horrible, because it was just another thing for me to hate myself over. Like, I literally, like, I do it, and I do it all the time, but like, you know, like, it made me feel, if people, like, a lot of the time, if people came in and asked me what I was doing, oh yeah, let's listen to that, I'd literally just delete it on the spot and be like, and this is your fault, you made me do this. And, you know, and I think, and, you know, and occasionally I would put stuff out and we would play gigs, and again, like, you know, I'd usually have to get so fucking waved that I would just, like, you know, it would be shit, or I'd, like, you know, pour beer all over the sound desk, or just fucking all get kicked out, like fucking argue with the bouncers, like, you know, all that dumb shit. And like, the creative, you know, I guess I liked the concept of it. My ego liked the fucking, you know, being like, yes, you know, I'm a music producer, I'm part of, you know, such and such a thing. And it's like, actually now, I was super worried. I didn't make music for a while when I first, you know, came in. I just did, you know, my head was just fucked. But yeah, slowly but surely, actually now is like, my relationship with my creative side is way, way better. And I didn't think, you know, because I was like, especially a lot of stuff I was doing was like UK hip hop stuff. And I was like, I have to smoke weed to make you gay. Like, it's just like, it's like the only fucking like concept of the whole fucking genre. It's just loads of people who are just fucking smoking weed. So like, yeah, like I was just like, it's impossible. But actually, yeah, I was barely doing it when I was drinking and using. And now, you know, like, yeah, I put out all the music that I put out on physical release has all been in recovery. I put, you know, I've had a cassette, I've had a 7-inch, got 12-inch vinyl, like, you know, milestones that are just like, you know, they're nice to have done. And yeah, I can be proud of it. And yeah, I think for me, like, it's, yeah, it was something that I very much thought I'd lose. And I think a lot of my friends who have, like, you know, who are creative and also found recovery have thought the same. But yeah, and we can still go out and play live shows. And I've played live shows and it's like, yeah, great to actually be like coherent and go and like, I, and you know, and I understand. Because, you know, I used to just shout at sound techs before and get behind the desk and not know what I was doing. I'd just fucking just say they were shit and just fuck it up, like feedbacking everywhere. And now it's like, you know, I can be understanding and I can be informed and, you know, and I can just enjoy the whole experience. And when I get money now, it's like, you know, for a show, just like go and buy a kebab and then go home and just wake up feeling blessed rather than like, you know, going into blackout for 4 days and like spending like $2,000 on my fucking credit card. So it's just like, yeah, it's like, I don't know. Yeah, creativity, you know, because it still is like the self-hate, I guess, it still is like something that can come up.
Yeah.
I think now it's just like, yeah, I have compassion for myself now and it's fine to like go through, you know, that process. And it's like, I don't have to like sit in it and get myself really mentally unwell. I can just like move away from it and like focus on something else that's creative. Like, you know, because I think even listening to music, listening to other people's music and like, just like ingesting other art forms is like in itself is creative. And I think, you know, because for a long time I couldn't do that. Like, yeah, I couldn't, I wasn't really paying attention to anything like around me.
Mm. I can relate to that, not taking in things around me, like, because I was so, I had such a bad relationship with my own creativity that I could barely take in anyone else's because of the resentment that would arise. And you know, I'm still working on that element of it myself, but I can certainly start now. I have a much better relationship with appreciating other art again, and that was the that's always been the joy of my life. So I'm so happy that it's coming back slowly. I think the whole my own creativity is still to blossom somewhat more, I hope, but I do find that I'm exploring it in other ways, like you say, and exploring other art forms. And I do see that as creative. Like, personally for me, I even see reading as a creative activity. Mm. Now I never would have, and I wasn't into it before, but for me now it's like I can explore these worlds of other places that, because you come up when you read, you come up with the vision in your mind yourself. To me, that's deeply creative.
Mm. Yeah, man.
And I do think that's, I will be able to
brain, yeah, muscles, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I do look forward to the day that I can properly get back into producing myself, but I think it's got to come naturally.
Yeah, yeah, man. Yeah, 100%. You can't force, yeah, those, because, you know, because I think, you know, I probably took, you know, a couple of years of hiatus, you know what I mean, and like still, like, you know, engaging activities, but yeah, and I still do, like, if I need to take a break from it, I don't beat myself up around it. And it's like, yeah, when it comes, it comes. I think that's, you know, yeah, you don't want to
force anything,
to force it. Yeah,
it ruins it, doesn't it? I was the exact same. I mean, with when I was drinking, I just always try and pick up like an instrument and stuff like that, but then just like play one note wrong or something and just be like, ah, I'm fucking shit. Like, I won't amount to anything. We might as well just quit. But I think that's the great thing about recovery. Like, just finding, like, actually just having the mental capacity to explore that stuff again and like actually look in different avenues, and like, that's just refreshing. And just see it actually when you're trying to remove your ego from it too. I mean, because just so much of what I used to do and what I wanted to do was so I would get recognized and appreciated for it. Whereas now, like, having that for yourself and just you, like, and having that time to like just get in contact with yourself and be creative is, yeah, I sound cringe as fuck saying this, but it's like, it's true. It's true. It's great.
Yeah, man.
It is good. Like, just for me, it was a big part of building a relationship with myself again, was being creative. And I think it will still continue to have that positive relationship with myself.
So, potentially one of the most important questions, no pressure. What would you say to the newcomer into recovery today?
just fucking keep coming back. Nah, I mean, that is that. That is what I would say. But listen to me. Listen to me when I tell you. Don't fuck about just trying, like, you know, like, it's weird and it seems fucking confusing and people use a lot of words and everyone's overly nice. But, like, to trust the process, just try and chuck yourself into it. Take the suggestions, you know what I mean? They are suggestions and you don't need to, like, there's a lot of confusing stuff, but just keep trying because it is a way out. I've tried a lot of things and everything was just fucking hopeless. This stuff, I've seen it work countless times to people way worse than myself. So yeah, keep coming back.
It's a good note to end on. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you. Did I ever say I'm alcoholic? By the way, if it wasn't implied, my name's Jack and I'm an alcoholic.
Nice. Thanks. So thank you for listening. We will see you next time.